Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick,
and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's broadcast, Pope Benedict marks the feast of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The Marian Shrine at Lourdes celebrates a Jubilee year. Our popular Latin lover tells the story of Bernadette. And finally, musical notes to mark the second Sunday in Advent. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. It's tradition, like each year, to mark the feast of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, a national holiday here in Italy. Pope Benedict left the Apostolic Palace in the Vatican in the afternoon, heading by car to the city centre, where right by Rome's Spanish steps a crowd awaited him, by the column where there's a statue of Our Lady representing the Immaculate Conception.
Among those welcoming him there were the mayor of Rome and the city authorities, as well as church authorities and Christmas shoppers who looked on eager to catch a glimpse of the Pope. But only the authorities and some among the disabled in their wheelchairs and, of course, children managed to personally meet him. There was a floral homage on hand, and two officials solemnly placed a huge wicker basket full of white cabbage roses at the foot of a column in a symbolic gesture of Marian devotion. And naturally, there were prayers.
Figlia prediletta del Padre.
The Pope spoke in Italian, sharing thoughts with the crowds, explaining how he'd come to this place of Marian devotion with affection and filial love. How Mary invites us to keep away from evil and meekly embrace good in respect of the divine law inscribed in the heart of all Christians. He told all there how Mary never lost hope, not in the darkest moments at the foot of the cross. Taking her example, we too should look to the future with faith, even when suffering and death knocks at the doors of our homes, the Pope stressed. The Immaculate Virgin Mary, he said, exhorts us to work in solidarity towards the building of a more just and peaceful world. Today, on this solemn feast day, the Church indicates Mary as sign of hope and of the final victory of good over evil. Earlier in the day, Pope Benedict had developed this same theme while speaking to pilgrims who'd gathered in St. Peter's Square to pray the Angelus with him. Let's listen to his words in English.
Dear friends, I pray that by gazing upon her, you will see the purest sign of hope in God's saving mercy.
On this occasion, as he'd done in Rome's city centre later on in the day, the Pope had recalled how during Advent the star of Mary Immaculate shines for us as a sign of real hope and consolation, reiterating that theme developed in his recent encyclical focusing on hope, Spe Salvi. He explained how in our search for Jesus Christ, who is the true light, the sun that has risen above all the shadows of history, we also need lights close by, people who shine with his light and guide us along the way. And who more than Mary could be a star of hope for us?
E quale persona è più luminosa di Maria?
But Pope Benedict also put this message of hope into context, highlighting how young people today grow up in a society which often offers false models of happiness, running the risk, consequently, of losing hope, of becoming orphans of that true love which brings with it meaning and joy. Regrettably, he warned, we hear of adolescents, young people, even children who fall prey to corrupted love, who are victimized by adults without any scruples. Adults who lie to themselves and to their victims, drawing them into a consumistic world where there is no way out. Adults who don't even stop in the face of something as sacred as the human body, temple of the God of love and life, but on the contrary use their victims as objects, increasingly even before they reach adolescence. How sad, the Pope added with regret.
Che tristezza Quando I ragazzi smariscono lo stupore.
When children lose their candor, the enchantment of beautiful sentiments.
L'incanto dei sentimenti più belli.
The value of respect for the human body, which is a manifestation of the person and of its unfathomable mystery.
E del suo insondabile mistero.
Finally, Pope Benedict encouraged those present to turn to Mary the Immaculate Mother of Hope once again. It is to Mary, he said, that we should address our prayers while we ideally go on a pilgrimage to Lourdes, where today a special Jubilee year begins to mark the 150th anniversary of her apparitions in the grotto at Massabielle.
Delle sue apparizioni nella grotta di Massabielle.
Earlier in the week, Pope Benedict had granted the faithful who go on pilgrimage to Lourdes a year-long plenary indulgence beginning on this same date, the 8th of December, clearly according to specific conditions. And in the new year, to mark this particular date, the Pope himself will be travelling to Lourdes, a place of pilgrimage already familiar to him as he went there on many an occasion before being elected to the papacy. But this coming year he'll be going for the first time as Roman Pontiff, following in the footsteps of his predecessor to the Holy See, the late Pope John Paul II, who went there in 1983 and 2004. As you probably know, the devotion to the Immaculate Conception is linked in a particular way to Lourdes. In fact, on the 11th of February 1858, in one of her appearances to Bernadette Soubirous, the Virgin Mary spoke to her saying, "I am the Immaculate Conception," a miracle which took place 4 years after Pope Pius IX had proclaimed the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, precisely on the 8th of December 1854. Bernadette was only 14 years old at the time of these apparitions. I say that in the plural because there were 17 of them in all. At first silent ones, then with precise requests asking that people come and pray and do penance there, and also that a chapel should be built in the place of the apparitions. Although it was only 4 years later, on the 18th of January, 1862, that the bishop sent out a pastoral letter acknowledging their authenticity. And so it was that the story of Lourdes as we see it today began. One person who lives and works in Lourdes in his quality as chaplain to English-speaking pilgrims who visit the shrine there is Father Martin Moran, who belongs to the Order of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. Point of fact, all of the chaplains in the sixth official language belong to this order, which celebrates its feast day, well, on the feast of the Immaculate Conception. Father Martin Moran, you belong to the Order of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. Is there a specific reason for your serving as a chaplain in Lourdes?
Well, there's a specific reason, Veronica, in the sense that the Oblates were asked to take on the chaplaincies for the various language groups a number of years ago, and my own home province of the Anglo-Irish province was asked to supply the English language chaplain coordinator. You know, it fits in with our own charism. And having Mary Immaculate as our patroness.
The apparition at Lourdes is connected to Mary Immaculate, no?
Yes, it is, because if you remember from the story of the apparitions, the lady, as Bernadette called her, the thing, the Aquero, didn't speak for a few of the apparitions, and then Bernadette was asked by the parish priest, ask her who she is, ask her to tell you who she is. And she said in the local dialect, "I am the Immaculate Conception." And that was just a short time after that dogma had been pronounced by the Pope that Our Lady was the Immaculate Conception. So it is very closely linked with the dogma, and it gave affirmation and confirmation to that, the apparitions here in Lourdes.
Lourdes is viewed as the shrine of water, of a miraculous spring, now with powerful healing energy. Do pilgrims go there to be physically healed from sickness or disability, or does the healing go beyond that?
Well, no, if I could just clarify something, Veronica. The water itself isn't looked on as miraculous. It was a miraculous event that the spring came forward whenever Our Lady asked Bernadette to dig at the earth, and she had to try about four times. And first of all, the water ran quite muddy, and then it ran clear, and that spring has been running since the time of the apparition. But the waters themselves are not curative or healing. It all depends on the faith of the individual. And yes, many people do come to Lourdes looking for physical healing. They do. But many more come just asking God to help them live their lives as best they can, and they leave Lourdes. And we talk about miracles that have been declared formally by the church, but many, many people would say that every day there are miracles here at Lourdes, and I'm not saying that in any flippant way, but you know, people are touched deeply by God and are very aware of his presence in their lives.
Lourdes is currently celebrating its Jubilee year, marking as it does a century and a half since Our Lady appeared to Bernadette there, no?
Yes, so, that's correct, yeah.
And there's a monthly calendar of events, I believe, outlined for the occasion. I noticed it's not just about Mary, the sick, the disabled, which is what you would expect, but it's also about sharing the life of the church more in general. Why is that, do you think?
I think because Lourdes was never something that was meant to be inward-looking, and looking at the celebrations for the 150th anniversary of the apparitions, we were asked, you know, to think on what Lourdes is meant for today. What is Lourdes about? It's about sharing the gospel with the 21st century and the aspects of the gospel that are manifested in Lourdes. And Bishop Jacques Perrier, the Bishop of Tarbes, Lourdes, he put forward what he's calling 12 missions that will be highlighted at various times during the year. Missions of the church, but as I say, that Lourdes would feel it has a certain expertise in helping to further the gospel today. And that's the wonderful thing about Lourdes. It's nothing about it is contrary to the gospel.
What are these missions exactly?
For example, you know, today we have a large conference of the international gathering of the people who come here to help in Lourdes, knowing as the Hospitalier. They're meeting and they're taking up the first mission, and that is the church in mission with its volunteers in the service of others. And that's, you know, very appropriate for today, very appropriate for Lourdes. Another mission is the church in mission with Mary. We are called to follow the example of Mary and to give our yes to God as she gave her yes or to God through the angel. Another mission is the church in mission with young people, how we can help young people to discover Christ in their lives and to be a part of the church and to be the church not just of tomorrow, as often people say, but the church of today also. Another one that is very much associated with Lourdes is people who do come here looking for physical healing. And one of the missions that we have is the church in mission with people with disability. Another one that I've just looked at here is the church in mission for peace. Again, working for peace, you know, in our own world, between countries and within ourselves. So, as I say, that's just a few of them, but there is a website dedicated especially to the Jubilee year, and all the missions will be found on that website. And if I may give it to you, it's Lourdes2008.com, and that will give you all the information about the Jubilee year.
It may be an extraordinary year, but ordinary life goes on just the same in Lourdes. No, people go to immerse themselves in the waters and hope to be healed. Life goes on, doesn't it?
Life goes on. Yeah, it will be an extraordinary year in that we're celebrating a wonderful anniversary. But I liken it to, you know, a couple celebrating their wedding anniversary, and every year they celebrate that. But, you know, for their silver wedding or their golden wedding anniversary, that's a very special year. But at the core of that, you've got two people who love each other and who come to publicly celebrate the fact that they're celebrating that anniversary. And so it's the same for Lourdes. Like, many people will come next year, or this year if we're anticipating it by a day, will come to Lourdes to celebrate the Jubilee, but people who have been coming for a number of years, you know, to experience that which Lourdes has to offer. So yes, the ordinary will go on, but in the context of the Jubilee, in the context of the anniversary.
The shrine has always exercised a ministry of welcome, which is something you do as well, no?
Yes,
it can't
is, yeah.
always be easy to do that. I mean, when the suffering reach here, they've been travelling and are in pain perhaps, and those who are accompanying them are pretty tired. How do you deal with that?
Well, Lourdes could not survive without its volunteers. And I think the last figures I heard just a few weeks ago is that Lourdes has about 100,000 people who come here as volunteers to work at various times through the year. So certainly you're right in saying that people come here tired, especially if they've come over land on a long train journey or bus journey. But there will be a team of volunteers waiting to receive them, to welcome them, working in the two hospitals that the sanctuary has, the Acaille Notre Dame and the Acaille Marie Saint Frey. They're not your regular type of hospital, but they're set up like that for people who need a little bit more care, and they're there to welcome those people, to give them rest, and, you know, great care is taken of the sick. And then, of course, for the ordinary pilgrim, you know, there are lots and lots of hotels in the town.
You must have spoken to a lot of pilgrims in the time that you've been in Lourdes. They've obviously spoken to you about their reaction to the place. Is there something that stands out in a special way, do you think?
What stands out for me over the year is that people come and they get on, you know, say the helpers that come, they come and they get on with their work, and they're really giving of themselves. They're doing it voluntarily. They've taken their own annual leave to do that, so they're giving up their holidays to do this voluntary work. So those people stand out. And another incident during the year, a young husband came with his wife, and his wife had been here before, and he came. Now, I wouldn't say he was sceptical or cynical or anything, but just your ordinary Catholic, if you say. And he was extremely touched and moved by the whole experience of the grotto and the baths and the processions that go on here. And to see him, his face was visibly moved by all he witnessed here, you know, with the sick who come and the way they're looked after and cared for. So those sorts of images come to mind as you ask that question. And then the people who want to talk to a priest, who maybe haven't spoken to a priest at a deep level for whatever number of years that might have happened, and they find that very reassuring, to be affirmed in their faith. And if they're able to offload any baggage they've been carrying for years, you know, a worry or something that's been on their minds, you know. So those things are the things that happen here on a daily basis.
But surely there must be people who come with great expectations and are disappointed, no?
I honestly haven't met that. I honestly haven't met them. Like, people come, again, I can think of some people who came for a physical cure. I can think of a family, again, a mother and father brought their very severely handicapped daughter, and they came looking for a cure for her, and they spent the week here. And, you know, they did all the things that pilgrims do, the processions, going to the baths, taking part in the various liturgies, the masses that we have here. But at the end of the week, they said, we came for one thing, but we're leaving with another. And what they were leaving with was that they found a new strength to be able to be with their daughter in a new way. They found strength to look after their daughter. And that was quite a powerful thing for them and for us to be with them during that week. You know, so they didn't leave disappointed. They left here changed, with a very renewed sense of their own faith, but also a new strength, and a renewed strength in their lives. I genuinely can't say I've met people who leave disappointed. They leave tired, but not disappointed.
And some of them leave shocked, because in Lourdes, like in all shrines, it's not something specific to Lourdes. There's also the commercial element with the glitz of the tacky souvenirs under neon lights.
Yeah, yeah.
How does all this fit in with the faith that brings people here? Do the pilgrims actually enjoy that sort of thing?
I think for the first time pilgrim, they enjoy going to the shops, getting souvenirs, you know. Like what I say to people, you know, if you go to wherever, you know, an ordinary resort for your holiday, most people like to bring back a souvenir, you know, and they'll want something tangible, A, for themselves, and B, you know, a little memento for a friend or family they'd like to take back as souvenir. And then as time goes on, for people who have, you know, been here several times, that tends to not be as such a part of their pilgrimage. But it is still, you know, a part for most people that they want to bring back some Lourdes water or a little medal or something. But it's not actually in conflict with what goes on in the sanctuary, because once you step through the gates into the sanctuary area, the domain, you're in a different world. And there isn't a conflict there. You know, I mean, yeah, it's down to each person's individual taste. It really doesn't feature once people enter into the domain.
Our thanks there go to Father Martin Moran of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, the English language chaplain for the shrine at Lourdes. And now, moving on in the programme, on a very different note, we join our popular Latin lover for the story of Bernadette. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster.
Lourdes is la Purdum,
So in 1858, when a young lady by the name of Bernadette Soubirous...
Bernardula, little Bernadette.
A young lady?
Puella, Bernardula, go on.
A simple peasant girl.
Uh-huh.
How do you say that?
Rustica simplex puella.
Claimed that the Virgin Mary had appeared to her on 18 occasions.
Oh, many. Asseverabat sibi se videndam de disse Virgine Mariam duo de vicies. 18 or duo de vicies. It's kind of hard to say in Latin.
Investigations failed to shake her narrative. How do you say that?
Narrationem eius investigationes evertereum concutere non poterant.
Now we got to the last line of my potted history of Bernadette Soubirous. How do you say potted history in Latin?
What does potted mean?
A pressy.
Okay, I understand, yeah. Capitulatim est historia mea. So capitulatim dicta or something.
So the capitulatim dicta, the last sentence of the capitulatim dicta is a spring with miraculous healing properties that appeared at the same time, that was in 1858, began to draw invalids from all over the world.
Fons cum virtute quadam salutifera...
That's healing.
Salutifera, fabulosa, miraculous.
Ah, fabulous.
Fabulosa,
that's
salutifera.
That's where we get fabulous from.
Certainly, that people talk about.
We used to talk about the Beatles as the Fab Four.
Okay. Cum virtute, with power. Cum virtute, fabulosa, salutifera. What happened to the spring? I didn't finish the sentence. A spring with these healing powers did what? Appeared?
Appeared, yeah.
Ah, quae eodem tempore emerzit.
Began to draw invalids from all over the world.
Cepit infirmos undique gentium aducere.
Mm-hmm. Now I've got a concept for you here to translate. As always, when there are alleged miracles, there was some red tape. How does one say red tape in Latin?
Oh, red tape. We would probably end up saying officiorum impedimenta, impediments of the office, you know, bureaucratic impediments.
Before it got ecclesiastical recognition.
Officiorum impedimenta, antequam bene, antequam autoritate ecclesiastica est comprobata.
Warm thanks there to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And moving on in the programme, it's time to celebrate this Advent tide on some musical notes. That's with music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore. Stay tuned.
Repent and be baptized. The Lord is at hand. With these words, John the Baptist burst onto the scene on the banks of the River Jordan, dressed in camel hair with a leather belt round his waist. He must have cut quite a remarkable figure. On the second Sunday of Advent, our liturgy focuses on this powerful preacher, the one who came to prepare the way for the coming of the Lord, to make his paths straight. In proclaiming his message, of course, John was continuing in the line of the Old Testament prophet, particularly Isaiah. Long before John was born, Isaiah had spoken of a voice crying in the wilderness, "Prepare a way for the Lord, make his path straight. Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill made low, the crooked straight, and the rough places plain." music comes near the beginning of Handel's Messiah. Starting with the prophecies of Isaiah, Handel takes us through the Christmas story and on through the Passion, the Resurrection, and the Glorification of Christ. No wonder there are so many performances of Handel's Messiah at this time of year. If you get a chance to listen to one, it's a good way of preparing for Christmas and reflecting on the deeper meaning of the Incarnation. Some of the hymns we sing during Advent take the preaching of John the Baptist as a starting point. On Jordan's bank, the Baptist's cry announces that the Lord is nigh. Come then and hearken, for he brings glad tidings from the King of Kings. As we prepare for the Lord's coming, we do well to make a straight path for him in our own hearts by repenting of our sins and turning back to him. That, after all, was John the Baptist's message. The next verse of the hymn takes up this theme. Even though we sing it only once a year, it's a popular hymn and one that people find easy to remember. That's partly because the same tune is used again on Palm Sunday to the words, ride on in majesty. It's an old German tune adapted for these two very different English texts during the Victorian period. Another popular hymn from the same period begins, like this one, with a reference to John the Baptist. The thrilling voice which seems to say, Christ is nigh. Advent is a beautiful season, and a surprisingly short one, just over 3 weeks altogether. There's plenty of fine Advent music to listen to in that short time. It's a real shame that so often, instead of focusing on Advent, we find ourselves singing Christmas carols all through December. Do try and avoid doing that if you can. It's like opening the presents early.
And a big thank you there once again to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian who's currently working as an official at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. And that brings us up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org.
You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.